This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
It's the third hour of Felger and Mads. We'll go right to your phones. We got Red Sox, Yankees. Again, more Patriots stuff to pick our way through. And we'll get to Bruins this hour as well, as their lineup continues to go through some changes heading into tomorrow night. But we'll lead off with Randy in Maine. Go ahead, Randy. What do you got on Tom Brady?
Well, I was just curious. I'm not married, but you don't suppose Tom is putting up a smokescreen to Giselle, do you? I have friends that it's amazing the ducking covers they use with their wives. Like, I'm not signing Giselle. See, there's a chance I could retire and then come up on the schedule.
Hey, Randy?
I say this watching my married friends operate.
Randy?
Yes?
You're too smart to be in Maine, man. You got to get out of there. Because that's, I think that's a possibility.
That's a great one.
Isn't it a great one? Like, she's in his ear. Tom, you have to retire. It's okay. I'm considering retiring. You've got to think about your family and the balance of your life, and you have to pick your kids up at school. What else can I say to make her
and
go
so
away?
And so now, you know, when she calls her other model friends, she'll call up Cindy Crawford.
Cindy, you will not believe it. He's actually starting to believe. He's listening to me. He's talking about retiring. He's saying he's year to year. He's talking about the family now. Now he actually cares. It sounds like he cares.
Meanwhile, he's like, how much longer can I put up with this? Yeah, I'm thinking of retiring, finally. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great conspiracy theory. Not going to sign an extension because that will tip her off. And I'll say all the right things. I'll sit with Strahan and Regis and Kathy or whatever with my legs crossed and say, you got to balance picking up your kid. Yeah, I'm going to pick him up at practice. I'm going to pick him up at practice already. All right.
Naomi Campbell, you will not believe it. What's new with me? He's finally going to walk away from his stupid game. He's talking about walking away. Finally, he's listening to me.
Meanwhile, yeah. I'm walking away. That's all. That's it. Yeah, I hate the coach. Yeah, everything sucks around here. Yeah, what am I doing this for?
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Kraft's in on it though.
Kraft's buying it, right?
He's left. You know, leaving Kraft dangling out there in the process. I don't think so.
We've got Bobby and Waltham on the Yanks. Hi, Bobby.
Hey guys, thanks for taking the call. Before the season started, I was one of the guys that said the Red Sox were going to end up better than the Yankees this year, and for two reasons. Number one is the Yankees don't have the two-headed starting pitching monster that a lot of these teams need. I mean, I see Houston, Cleveland, Boston, the Mets, and the Nats being like those teams, and the Yanks just don't have that right now.
Wait a minute. Which teams did you say?
Yep, Houston, Cleveland, Boston, the Mets, and the Nationals.
The Mets.
Yep.
I mean, they don't have three of those guys?
Oh, you're just talking about
top two starters.
Okay, you're just talking about the pitching now. Okay, all right.
Right.
Go ahead.
Just the top. And the other piece is that there must have been a huge culture issue with Stanton coming over. And I looked this up. The Yankees were dominant, I think we would all agree, from 96 until 2001. What happened in 2001 when that core was still young? Jeter, Posada, they were still young.
Torrey.
They signed Giambi. Giambi with that big contract, a non-pitcher with a big contract, I think it disrupts that culture. The young Yankee bombers right now, I think, wanted to win and wanted to win together. So they brought in this inflated contract. I don't know if the guy has an ego or whatnot, but I think it does something to the culture and the dynamic.
Okay, but, you know, and so I bring up Torrey because wasn't he a perfect guy for that team to manage all those egos and assimilate Giambi, whatever, and do all that?
Sure.
And I think that Torrey's. Well, I think that's what he did for that team. He was a steadying hand.
Right, but he stuck around well beyond 01.
So I guess I don't understand what he was trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's just saying that Stanton came in.
When did Showalter? When did
Torrey started in 96 and he was out in 08?
Okay, so I got my time on this.
Somewhere in there? It might have been whatever. But he was somewhere in that area. I mean, he was there about 10, 12 years. So, but what he's saying is effectively what we said about Stephon Gilmore coming into the Patriots locker room, that all of a sudden you get this high paid guy there when, you know, you have younger guys that you just got to game 7 of the LCS with, and you're going, what are you bringing him in for? What do we need him for? I mean, I don't completely rule it out. You know, Judge is making 650 grand this year, I think, something like that. Sanchez is making the same amount. Meanwhile, you know, Stanton's hauling in almost $30 million. So there could be some, but if you watch them in Toronto, Stanton looks like he's well received. Like, I don't rule it out. But I don't think that's really the biggest problem.
But this is where I do sort of put in the manager just a little bit, because Stanton needs a guy, right? He just needs someone to help him through this time. Is that Aaron Boone? Again, if Aaron Boone comes up to Giancarlo Stanton and says, I think I see your front foot, you know, like, I think Giancarlo says, get away from me, you little putz. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what commonality they have there. And I don't know if Boone's older is old enough and has been around enough for Stanton to say, I really got to listen to this guy because he's been around the block. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I don't know either.
You know, I mean, like, why would Stanton listen to Aaron Boone? I can see why a lot of Red Sox players would listen to Alex Cora for a multitude of reasons. But why would Giancarlo Stanton listen to Aaron Boone?
See, but he feels to me like a guy that Stanton would like. Like, I think Boone's a likable guy. So I think the problem with the Yankees right now is they need a manager who's got a little bit more of a edge. Because Girardi got a lot out of that team. Like, this guy feels a little too easygoing for my liking. I don't know if the Yankees are ready for that kind of easygoing manager.
Albert's in Rhode Island. Hi, Albert.
How's it going, guys? Murray, how old are you? I got curiosity.
Recently turned 41.
41, yeah. So there's definitely no brain cells left in your head. So I understand your take. How can you possibly think that Bill Belichick, in the best interest of the team, it wouldn't be wise for him if he believed the quarterback that is his next guy, who was taken from him, okay? His boss took him from him. That's why it happened to 23rd hour. That's why they got a second-round pick, because he didn't plan to move on from him. He planned to move your boy toy to a different area, but he was superseded by his boss. Okay, we all have bosses. So that's why it happened the way it happened. That's why Cleveland didn't get called. Now you think if he sees his next guy sitting there, he's gonna do everything he can for the guy who just, oh, why do we do this? Oh, I want to go play with my kids. I got to pick up my boys at baseball. Are you on drugs?
So what Albert is saying is Bill going to bend over backwards for Brady at this point?
No, he wouldn't. Absolutely not. But I wonder how much that actually matters to him long term, if he's really going to be walking away in a year or two. I think, like, we all believe that he's going to. So it's about, that's where Bill, I think, is a bit selfish, because he doesn't want to leave the team in shambles, because Bill Parcells has done this before in the past, and you know this isn't something that Belichick wants to do. That was written about in the Seth Wickersham piece. So there, to me, that looks like selfishness on behalf of Belichick, and that's not in the best interest of the team. Hell, it wasn't in the best interest in the team to get only a second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. So this plays into this whole, you know, bad feelings between all these parties behind the scenes. The best thing to do right now that you have committed to Tom Brady, because that's what you've done by trading Jimmy Garoppolo, is to continue to use these picks in the most unsexy way possible to fill the holes that you have. And there's many of them, especially on the defense. Bill being a defensive genius, too, I would think he'd want to have more defensive players. That's just me. So this is why I think he should do this. But then again, I'm crazy. I've lost all my brain cells, Albert.
Well, that part is true, Murray.
And as Robert Crawford said, you're soon to turn 42.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. You'll be 42 in 9 months.
Bob in Easton on Red Sox Yankees. Hi, Bob.
You know, and Bill Belichick has also gone into a season not having a young male center, never under 200 pounds. I mean, come on, guys. You know, Tony Maserati, let me tell you something, buddy. You're not dysfunctional. Or you're dysfunctional. You're not disloyal. You're dysfunctional. Today, Jay Stu, mark this day on your calendar of Felger and Maz, historical days. When I want baseball knowledge, I don't go to the worldwide leader. I don't even go to MLB. I go to Maz and Felger. But you, Maz, Mr. Baseball, today you had some gems you said today.
Tell me.
For the Red Sox.
Tell me.
Don't screw it up. I love it. Play with the big boys. That's big in this league. But here was your best. Michael Felger asked you, why so reluctant on Mookie Betts? Here was your response. Well, if you pitch him correctly, you limit his effectiveness. Wow. That's like saying, great pitching beats good offense. But then again,
not always true, though.
Talked about Stanton. Hold on. You have something to say?
Yeah, keep going, Bob. Quick.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah, go.
No, because but then when somebody brought up Stanton and you give up on Stanton, you said, no, it's early. Isn't that what the pitchers are doing to Stanton? Aren't they pitching him correctly to curb his effectiveness? Tony, what happened to you? It's sad. It's almost like, you know what? It's like watching a deteriorating, you know, rainbow. It's going away. What happened to you?
Sounds like Bob's concerned about you, Maz.
Yeah.
Tony, I am. You used to be a hell of a writer. You used to know baseball. I don't know what happened to you.
So Bob's calling it as a voice of concern.
I like his brother better. Seriously, I think his brother Adam and is it Bob and Adam and Brockton?
Adam and Brockton.
Adam and Brockton is so much such a better guy. It's not even funny. Look, Bob, here's what I would tell you. I'm talking about power. Sorry if I didn't articulate that clearly enough so that every knucklehead on the planet could understand it. If you pitch Giancarlo Stanton in any part of the strike zone and he hits it, it could go out of the ballpark. Okay? It could go out of the ballpark. Mookie Betts, if you pitch him in any part of the strike zone, the only way it's going out of the ballpark is if he hits it to left field, which means if you pitch him on the outer part of the plate, he's really not going to hurt you if you make a mistake. Okay? I thought that that part of it was obvious, but silly me, I will do a better job of using more words, speaking more slowly, dragging down the show so that I can make sure everybody understands me clearly. That's what I will do going forward. Proceed.
Tugger Maz, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's out tomorrow. Worked out today. We'll skate tomorrow, but he won't play tomorrow. Saturday, potential, but we'll see how he progresses. Another two guys at full practice today, Sean and Nash and Crowley, sorry. So I anticipate they'll play tomorrow, or they're available to play.
Felger Maz will be at the TD Garden tomorrow for 4.5 hours leading into the Bruins game one against Toronto. So plenty of Bruins tomorrow, but I got to give you some right here. And if you want to join us, we've given away the Bruins tickets. So please, you can stop calling on that, please. If you want to join us on Red Sox Yankees, our Patriots stuff so far today, Bruins, whatever you want, the line to talk sports would be 617-779-0985. So again, Riley Nash, the third line center, out for tomorrow. Man, that must be some kind of gash that he took. And as we keep seeing replays of it, it's not like, I mean, it's easy for me to say, I didn't just get hit in the head with a puck, but this was not a back scratcher by Torey Krug. It was really more of like a snapshot. And so I just, you know, something weird must have happened there.
Yeah, must have got him in a bad spot or something,
I mean,
right?
40 stitches is 40 stitches, so it obviously got him.
I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, but I thought
he was going to play. I told you this yesterday. I thought he was going to play, and I thought, that Junta thing, that's nothing. Nash is going to play. He's fine. Then all of a sudden today you find out he's not in the game, and honestly, I don't like it. To me, you know, I've heard other people talk about this, that against this sort of team, your D's going to be under a lot of pressure. You're going to need good back-checking forwards. Riley Nash is that kind of guy, particularly in the middle. And so, you know, they need him in this sort of series. So I don't like it from that standpoint. But I also don't like the ripple effect of it. Like, you know, it feels whenever you lose a guy and you move someone from another line and Achari's going to move up now and play with that group on the third line, to me, you're weaker in two areas. Like, I don't like it.
So Riley Nash being out, here's the effect that Maz was just talking about. Line rushes today at practice. First line's the first line. Krejci line remains the same since Rick Nash apparently is back. Krejci, DeBrusk, Rick Nash. The third line, Heinen, Backes, centered by Achari. So they're moving Achari up from the fourth line to center the third. The fourth line now becomes Corrali, Tim Schaller, and Wingles. Donato's still out. And now this feels more like official, like what's going to happen tomorrow night, because, again, when Gianta was skating with the Backes and Heinen line, that was just a practice look, and, okay, Riley Nash was still expected to play. Now that Nash is out, that line is that line. Achari moves up between Heinen and Backes, and the fourth line becomes Schaller, Corrali, and Wingles. And Ryan Donato, your fourth leading scorer since he's been here, when you're leading power play guys, I would say already he has the second best shot on the team. Third. Marchand, Pasternak, and then it's him and Krug. So he's in that group in terms of shooters on your team. I think it's those four guys. I think Ryan Donato already steps off the college rink and is a top five offensive player for you. Let me just put it to you like
that. He's got a better shot than Krug if you ask me, but go ahead.
Okay, fine. Then maybe it's him and Rick Nash. He's top three, top four shot. Just pure release on the team. Ryan Donato's out in favor of Tommy Wingles. Your thoughts?
I don't like it. No, I don't. How could you like it? I mean, how could you? So I don't like it. I mean, it's one thing to me if you got Riley Nash in there and you're keeping that fourth line intact. And so I would just as soon have Donato in there. To me, I'll take every bit of offense I can get against the Leafs. I think Toronto's going to score in this series. I do. And so you're going to have to get four to win.
I'd even take him over Achari. There has to be something in this kid's game they don't like, despite as good of an offensive player as he is.
Is it just the inexperience?
Well, like, I mean, you can rub him out. He's a slight guy who just stepped into the league and isn't physically ready for it. I mean, that's I would admit that. But if you're on the power play, that's why I'm going to miss him, the power play. Like, so look, do I want Ryan Donato skating on that fourth line with Corrali and Schaller banging bodies and kamikaze stuff that they do? No, that's not Ryan Donato. Tommy Wingles profiles more as a fourth liner because he kind of sucks. And that's when, so the fourth liner has to grind and crash and like that's what they do down there. And that's not Ryan Donato. So Ryan Donato's sort of not a great fit for the fourth line. I get that. You are going to go on the power play, aren't you? I mean, a couple times. Ryan Donato is just second best power play. I mean, he's right there. I think that's where you miss him.
Okay, so do you buy into the answer at all that Cassidy gave yesterday about Rick Nash? Give him that.
Rick Nash is on PP1 right now. So, and Rick Nash is a good net front presence. I don't know.
But you can't just carry a forward just for two power play appearances.
You're right. But that's where they're going
to
miss him.
So to me, honestly, like I look at that third, like they clearly don't want Backus playing in the middle, right? Because you could put Backus in the middle on that third line and put Donato on the right wing. They've done that before with Heinen. But they obviously don't want to do that to Backus. So there's something about Backus defensively that they don't like either. Maybe it's a speed thing with this team because he's not fast.
So we'll see. D pairings, it looks like it's Krug and Miller and Greslick and McQuaid, which is weird because they split up Greslick and Miller, which was a really good pair for you all season long. So I don't know why they split those two guys up, but they did. The note there is that it's McQuaid in, holding out, which if you want to go back and grade the trade, it's an overpay for a guy to be your seventh defenseman. But if you want to just put that aside and just judge it on what I've seen, I'm okay with him going McQuaid over Holden. I'm just okay with it. Holden's fine. I think McQuaid plays a simpler game, which I'm okay with, which is maybe what they need next to Grizzlick. So fine. The big one's Donato. Since he's joined you, he's got 9 points in 12 games. He's a plus two, and he's automatically one of your best offensive players, and he sits. So how do you feel about that? You think the Bruins are going to give up a lot of goals. So does everybody else. I mentioned before, here's my second Bruins item. And that is, I mentioned yesterday when we talked to Joe McDonald how there's this great divide when it comes to the assessment of Tuukka Rask.
Sure.
There's the people that cover the team, and then there's everybody else. So it's like everybody else, and I mean everybody, looks at Tuukka Rask and says, "Yeesh, I don't know. Good, but I don't feel really confident. I don't know." And then there's like the 12 guys that cover the team that think he's awesome and we're all stupid. So that's the divide. It's not like 50-50. It's not 60-40. No. It's the 12 guys that cover the team on one side and everybody else on the other. And when I say the 12 guys that cover the team, I mean the local guys. ESPN just put out their goalie heat index, ranking who's hottest heading into the playoffs. They're ranking the playoff goalies 1 to 16. Let me give you these rankings, shall I? Who would you put number one?
Oh God, I haven't looked at the whole.
So it's it's Pekka Rinne because he went to the finals last year. He's a Vezina favorite this year. It's Rinne.
Okay, I would have said Quick, but go ahead.
Quick's two. Okay, Quick is two, and if you're asking me for my dark horse Stanley Cup champion, it's the Kings. I think they're a wild card out west, but Jonathan Quick, Drew Doughty, Kopitar, Brown, a lot of those guys, Toffoli, Muzin, all those guys are there from the championship. Not all of them, but enough of them that you know how I feel about Drew Doughty. I not only think he's one of the best defensemen in the league, I think he's one of the best players in the league.
So I'm deliberately not looking at the list.
Don't look at the list.
Okay, so I can guess.
So Pekka Rinne is one, Jonathan Quick is two, Sergei Bobrovsky, Columbus, is three.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Another perennial Vezina guy.
How about Schneider? Where's he? Is he in there somewhere?
Just let me do this now.
Oh, sorry. I thought you wanted me to guess.
No, I don't. Number four, because then you're going to flail around and throw a bunch of names on. You're going to ruin the whole bit.
Wow. Yeah.
Number four is John Gibson with the Anaheim Ducks. Number five is Marc-Andre Fleury of the Vegas Golden Knights.
That's a mistake.
Number six, this guy...
Man, shut up.
Number six, this guy should be higher, is Connor Hellebuck in Winnipeg. So now we've gone through the first half dozen. Have I mentioned Rask?
No. Nope.
Hold on, let me go back over my list.
I don't believe there was anyone in there named Tuukka.
Because DJ Bean and all the local guys would be telling you how good, how set we are with Tuukka. And the neutral guys, the national guys, the neutral guys. Rinne, Quick, Bobrovsky, Gibson, Fleury, Hellebuck. Nope, I didn't mention Rask. Okay, we're at six. Now comes seven. Matt Murray, Pittsburgh Penguins.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Won a couple cups. That's fair. Number 8, Andre Vasilevsky in Tampa. I think you passed over him to get Malcolm Subban. Was that the same draft year? I can't remember.
It was.
Number 8 is Vasilevsky. So now we're halfway through, and Rask hasn't even mentioned the top half. Number 9. Oh, there he is, Tuukka Rask. Number 9. Number 9, Tuukka Rask. You want their write-up?
Sure, yeah, read it.
ESPN's Barry Melrose joins Greg Wyshynski and Emma. Oh, that's a wrong thing. That's a promo. Rask has a reputation as an elite goaltender. He sure does, guys. You listen to DJ Bean and the guys around here. Yes, he does. You are right, ESPN. He has the reputation. I'm going to put that in quotes. Put little quote marks around reputation. He has the reputation as an elite goaltender.
That's the first line?
Yep.
Did you write that or did they?
I swear to God. Rask has the reputation of an elite goaltender, but that hasn't been true for some time. Ha! Huh! Interesting when you get an outside opinion on this.
Like 5 years.
In the past three seasons, he has a so-so 916 save percentage. The Finnish veteran also gave the Bees just three quality starts in six playoff games last year. Thank you for mentioning that, because I thought in the playoffs last year, he was Joe average. Joe average. Only 3 of 6 starts last year for Tuukka were quality starts, according by their metrics, whatever that is. That's quite a drop from the 24 quality starts in his first 34 postseason starts. The Bruins might have to do something out of character this year and rely heavily on their offense to win in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and oh, by the way, Frederik Andersen in Toronto's number 10. So basically, they have the goaltending thing in this round a wash. And it's another case, another example of when it comes to Tuukka Rask, there's the guys that cover the team, and then there's everybody else. Everybody else looks at him and says, I don't know. He's more middle of the pack. I've been saying this for a while. He's more middle of the pack than elite.
I'm with everybody else.
And I think, you know, now that doesn't mean he can't get hot and win. And I hope he does. This isn't a prediction. I'm just telling you how most people view Tuukka Rask versus what you're sold on Tuukka Rask. But we'll see. It's all going to be there for us tomorrow night, right? And there's your hockey minute.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
That'll be a 2-1 now to Mookie. Bases loaded, 2 out. Swung on, there goes the deep left. It is high, it is far, it is gone. It's a grand slam. Mookie Betts is murdering the Yankees in every single way. He grand slams in the monster seats. 9 runs are in the inning. Well, what a night. Double, single, walk, double, grand slam. He has scored 5 runs and knocked in 4. Wow.
And boy, if you're in the home dugout, they're just having fun.
James in the truck on Red Sox-Yankees last night. Go ahead, James. What do you got for us?
I've got some news for Maz, the blue hat. Your bedroom desires do not translate to the baseball diamond. You need people on base, not solo home runs or strikeouts. The Red Sox are a better, well-rounded team. And they will win the division, and your Yankees suck.
Okay,
again, congratulations on winning the division. You won it last year. Let's just see which team goes deeper in the playoffs. That's all. I mean, to me, so, and look, I'm not telling you it's going to be, that came out wrong. I'm not telling you it's definitely going to be the Yankees. It might not be, but I'm telling you that as of right now, they have more history there than you do, successful history, than the Red Sox do. So, I need to see it from this team. I also need to see it head-to-head. Last night was a good start.
Okay. The other thing, too, just as a PSA for Red Sox fans, if you think you're going to get Maz on Stanton this year, if he really has a terrible year, fine. Just know that he also has an Ohtani in his pants, too. So he's got backup.
Love Ohtani.
Meanwhile, there was a Instagram video posted today by Julian Edelman. Very interesting. Just days after it is reported publicly that Rob Gronkowski was called out by Bill Belichick in front of the team early in the season and basically derided for using the TB12 method. Basically, Belichick blaming Gronkowski's poor play in front of the team on his training methods with Alex Guerrero. The very week that comes out, Julian Edelman posted today on Instagram a video of him being worked on by Alex Guerrero, in which he says he's TB12ing.
Twice.
Make sure he lets everyone know he's TB12ing. Calls Guerrero Mr. Miyagi. And perhaps most pointedly, says pliability is better than ability. Which is co-opting a phrase that Bill Belichick uses inside the walls of Gillette Stadium to his team. Except Bill's phrase is, dependability is better than ability. And so we have read this correctly, I believe, as another in-your-face to Bill. This is Edelman standing with Brady and Gronkowski and saying, suck it, Bill. We're using this guy, and this guy's good, and that. We think that happened today. So Kyle in Boston, your thoughts. Hello, Kyle.
Kyle, I think you're making way too big of a deal about that. Like, his Instagram story is something that he posts every day, eating sandwiches, playing video games, driving in his car. It wasn't a premeditated stick to Bill. He just, something he was doing, he posted on Instagram. All right, bye.
Oh, okay, your phone sucks. Scott Zolak said today that none of these guys do anything just randomly. He said Brady, Gronkowski, Edelman, they all think about what they're posting, when they're posting, and there's purpose behind their posts.
So here's what I would say. If he wants to put a video up about himself eating breakfast, great. But this one wasn't just about breakfast.
So beyond Scott saying that, this is not 2 days after it's reported that Bill Belichick upbraids Rob Gronkowski for using the TB12 method. And then we have a POV, a point of view. And I don't get the difference between Instagram story and posting.
It's like, all the same.
Whatever.
It's social media.
He puts it out this day, the week of, not 2 days after the Gronkowski report, with him getting rubbed down by Guerrero, calling him Mr. Miyagi, making sure everyone knows it's a TB12 method, and co-opting one of Belichick's phrases and putting a Tom Brady phrase on top of it. TB12 method phrase on top of it, please.
Which is all on purpose. If he wanted this to be benign, he would make the Instagram story, and he would have said, hey guys, if you're concerned about my knee, here I am, rehabbing. Instead, he says, I'm TB12ing. I'm TB12ing. Take that, Bill.
I mean, and that pliability is ability line. Like, oof. That gets a little too close for comfort, if you ask me. That's like, you know, that's taking a Belichick bumper sticker and sticking it on his ass. That's what it is.
Pliability is ability.
I mean, literally, that is, Murray had a great example, a good comparison. That would be like Guerrero working on Edelman, and Edelman looking at the camera and going, doing my job. You know, like that. It's like, it feels like it's a purposeful sort of dig. There's intent there.
No days off, right?
Here I am. Right, exactly.
Getting worked on.
Exactly.
No days off.
Bill in North Attleboro.
This thing is, it's a mutiny. It's a coup.
It's a palace coup. Bill, what's your confidence level in Tuukka Rask?
About 20%. I called at the beginning of the season when they were doing bad, and I said, the guy has no fire in his belly and no mean streak. He's not going to carry you to the playoffs. He's just a mediocre goalie. The team's been playing out in front of him, out of their minds. Cassidy should be coach of the year as far as I'm concerned. And he just lets in the soft goals at the wrong time. And you've seen it. Everybody's seen it. Nobody has confidence in him.
All right. Don't let DJ Bean and the writers hear that. You get very upset. Tell you, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, we haven't been watching the same thing. So there's a great divide. Everybody and then the guys that cover the team.
And you know what? This is a series where he's going to get tested too. I mean, the Leafs can throw pucks at him. There's no two ways about that. He's going to get tested in this series.
Wally in Maine. Hi, Wally.
Hang on.
Wally.
Wally.
Yeah, it's you.
How you doing?
Good, Wally.
Good. Hey, why are we even comparing Belichick to this Guerrero guy? Seriously?
Well, what do you mean comparing?
I'm not talking about comparing, but he's rubbing down people and Belichick's winning Super Bowls. And championships.
Well, are you missing Maybe. The? Don't well, you?
No, I'm not missing the point.
I don't know what your point is.
My point is that you guys are crapping all over Belichick
a little bit.
To say Guerrero is, you know. That the guy should be going to him. And if Belichick says no, then maybe.
Oh, no. I agree with that. I think the players are dumping on Belichick, Wally.
Oh, well, no, I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, the players are dumping on him. This is
Maine.
Yes, that's what I expect from Maine, not the previous guy with the great insight into Giselle. Like, that's why I said, get out of Maine, buddy. Too good there. It's the players. It's the players taking pointed shots at Belichick. And again, the guys that use it, it's pretty much falling down that line. The Brady crew, the TB12 crew. When Amendola leaves, what does Gronkowski say? Be free. Be happy. When it's reported that Belichick ripped into Gronkowski for using TB12 early in the season, not days go by without Edelman posting a video being worked on. TB12ing, baby. And saying pliability is better than ability.
It's turned
pliability is ability.
It's turned into Mean Girls. They're all going at each other through social media now.
No, that's exactly what it is, Murray. You nailed it. Yeah, and this isn't us making fun of Belichick. It's his players.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's his players. It's Brady. It's Gronk. Amendola didn't really do it. He was just a vehicle for the other two. And it's this guy now, Edelman. Edelman's piling on. Look, how is this hard to follow? On Sunday, the story comes out that Belichick aired out Gronk for being a TB12 client and for using the TB12 method. 2 days later, Edelman puts it out there with Guerrero massaging his leg and says pliability is ability? Like, where's this? That's not even subtle. The timing is impossible to ignore there.
Long commercial-free segment is next. What I'd be most afraid of if I were the Yankees. Coming up next.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Just a crappy night all around.
Been a big thing for me. Both these teams, Cora and Aaron Boone, first-year rookie managers in two places that are really hard to manage. Really hard. And I always put the Yankees ahead of you in terms of just not liking the move or being baffled by the move. At least Cora was on a bench last year. And at least Cora has managed in the Winter League as much as he overrates that. At least he's done those little things. He's taken a half step or a quarter step. Aaron Boone done nothing. Never even managed Little League. And to walk into that team in that environment, and I think you're seeing it right out of the gate because that team's in trouble. Little bit of a crisis point. The media's up in arms. The fans are booing the team on the first day. The high-priced acquisition has come in and can't, you know, hit the broadside of a barn. And I watch Aaron Boone. I watched his full press conference last night after the game. I went, oh, boy. Deer in the headlights, Pete Carroll, Skippy Magoo. Like, What the Yankees need, like any, you know, like the Red Sox wouldn't need if they got off to a bad start, and they don't have it either. But, you know, they got off to a great start, so everything Cora does is sort of excused. He can even admit it. I made a mistake with J.D. Martinez. Ha, ha, ha. And everyone loves him for his transparency. So Cora can, you know, Cora's had a great little entree here, intro into being a major league manager, where he's gotten a lot of leeway because it's all covered up in the fact that they're winning. Boone doesn't have that. And what the Yankees need, Maz, because again, it's such a crisis point, is that they need a guy who's been around the block who can walk into that room and say whatever needs to be said. Now, you think they need someone to get at him. Like they need a little Giardi. They need someone.
I just think they need someone. I'm not even talking about the old school hard ass thing. I just think they need someone with a little bit of an edge that looks at them and goes, are you guys ready to play or not? Because it feels to me like Boone is sort of the prototypical modern day, new age, warm and fuzzy, soft manager.
Oh, and inexperienced on top of it. So whether it's someone to come in and, you know, sort of set the edge, or someone to come in and say sort of just the opposite.
Like, just be a calming presence.
Guys, I've been through this a million times. This is nothing. We're good. You know, have a beer, chill out. We'll see you tomorrow. Like, you know, like one or the other. And so I'm not even sure what's the right one. Maybe one's right on one day and the other was right the other day. But someone who's got a little bit of gravitas.
Presence.
And a little bit of presence to walk into the room and say, I've been through this 4 million times, and this is nothing. Or to say, I've been through this 4 million times, and actually, this isn't good enough. This is, you're in trouble if you keep playing like that. Instead, Aaron Boone, deer in the headlights. I mean, again, here was the cut that we played earlier.
How disheartening is it to start off the series this way?
Oh, yeah, it's, I mean, that's no fun getting beat up like that. You know, especially, you know, you have your ace going and, you know, certainly not the way we wanted to start the trip. But you also, you know, turn the page from it and you know, we're at least able to give some guys in our bullpen that we feel like we needed to another day's rest. So, you know, hopefully we'll benefit from that at some point this week. And, you know, the beauty of this game is it was settled pretty quickly there. And, you know, it's sometimes you flush these out really quickly and come back and square things up tomorrow. Nothing to do but turn the page on it.
Just sort of scares me. You know,
milk toast cliches. Oh. That's all that was.
You know what? I know we
talked
in the beginning of it is. And so it has you what, Murray? Just tell me who.
Well, he sounds like, in the quick turnaround on the TV side, he sounds like Hermie the Elf from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Now we on the TV side, we have a Yankee cap on Hermie. I don't want to be a broadcaster. I want to be a manager.
No.
He's the one that wanted to be the dentist.
I
want
to be a dentist.
Yes. He took all the teeth out of the abominable snowman.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
Giancarlo Stanton swing. It's right. As thick as pea soup.
Now he's taking all the teeth out of the Yankees. Is what he's done.
And so to me, like managing's sort of been a thing. So that's what I'm most interested in. These two guys, rookie managers handling big jobs. And I look at Aaron Boone and say, boy. And again, the one who needs the most help is Stanton. Or Sanchez, even. I mean, you made a good point about Sanchez and how Girardi was just all over Sanchez.
He rode him, yeah.
You know, catcher thing, probably, right? Like, and now that Girardi, and I'm going to say Girardi and Girardi back and forth, and I don't care how it's really pronounced.
Oh.
Okay, and so he leaves, the throat's off his neck. It's Mr., you know, Mr. Happy Pants here and Aaron Boone, and Sanchez has started out worse than Stanton.
Yeah, he has sucked. He's been brutal. Sanchez has been absolutely brutal here in the early part of the year.
And is Sanchez going to listen to Aaron Boone?
I don't, you know, and here's the other thing, too. Like, the Yankees coaching staff, you know, there was a, who brought it up earlier? A caller said, who's the bench coach?
No, I asked you in the break, who's their bench coach?
Okay, so the bench coach of the Yankees, I didn't know this. I just looked it up. Josh Bard. Who is the guy the Red Sox had to trade because he couldn't catch Tim Wakefield's knuckleball. Remember that? Now, look, you know, I'm not telling you that doesn't mean Bard can't be an effective coach. I'm just telling you that the bench coach of the Yankees.
What's his experience?
Bingo. So you go right through the staff here. Marcus Thames is the hitting coach. I don't know much about him. They have an assistant coach that I've never heard of. P.J. Plateri. Larry Rothschild they brought back. Okay, he's a veteran pitching coach. They kept him. Reggie Willits, Phil Nevin, Josh Bard, Mike Harkey, they completely overhauled their staff. They did what the Red Sox did, except they went to Game 7 of the LCS.
And Cora's got Renicky, you know, a guy
who's a 60-something, you know, veteran baseball guy.
Lifer, was a manager recently, like all of this. And
Josh Bard.
A guy who couldn't catch Wakefield is...
He's probably like the same age as Boone. He's probably 40.
He's got the rest of the misfit toys.
Oh God! So like that's on the flip side, Cora seems like a good fit here, but I think he's getting way too much credit. Getting way too much credit for admitting his mistake the other day. Like we got a guy who admits our mistakes. Like that changes it. So like Farrell never would have done that. No kidding, Farrell never would have done that. He thought you were out to fire him because you were. So of course Farrell was never going to admit that or take the same approach. He was paranoid and closed and secretive because he thought the Sox were out for his head, and they were. So, of course, he wasn't going to have the same approach. So, Cora at 8-1, when they're pitching lights out and letting up one or two runs a game and is 8-1, can say, yeah, I made a mistake. We all slap him on the back for his transparency, but we have no idea on Cora. None. And that sort of dovetailed into a Celtics thought where I scolded Dakota and Braintree and the Green Teamers. Where's your coach now? Telling me that a coach is as important as a superstar player? A coach in the NBA is as important as a superstar player, the owner and Dakota told me. And now that your superstar player is gone, but your coach is still here, it feels to me like the Celtics have fallen off the map. Good thing Brad Stevens is still healthy, Dakota. Otherwise, you know, who knows where they'd be.
First of all, in that equation that you just threw up in your mouth, I'm so happy that I can even be compared with Wick, okay? Because I'd much rather be compared with a thought about Wick who owns the Celtics than somebody that's behind the mic.
Okay, well, you're one of those people. Play the Wick sound. When Wick said this to us in late November, and I basically threw up in my mouth, and we were debating Brad Stevens and his importance to the team, when Wick said the following...
The coach is as important as any superstar in the
team. Okay, again, he couldn't even get it out. The coach is as important as any superstar. When he said that, minions like Dakota called him and said, see? And my only point is, your superstar is hurt and your coach is healthy. How do you feel about your basketball team? How do you feel about your basketball team? And it's silly to say that a coach is more important than a superstar, Dakota.
Here we go again. Can I get my thought out again? Because this is what you like to do. You like to just talk and put words in my mouth.
And play with the mute button. We're up against it, Dakota. I didn't hang up on you. Stay right there, I promise. We'll go right to you after Murray's update. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.